Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Kristen Eccleston, aka the Neurodiverse Teacher. And today I'm super excited to announce my guest, Stephen Kwong. Stephen is the co-founder and CEO of Curacubby, a next-gen fintech platform for education, recreation, and family activity programs. As a thought leader in operations and process management, Stephen has been featured in international media, including CNN, Forbes.com, and Inc. magazine. He currently serves as a mentor at the InvestNet Yodlee FinTech Launchpad and as an advisor to the Arrowhead Center of Innovation at New Mexico State University. Previously a parent co-founder of an early education program for children with special needs, and my personal favorite accomplishment of Stephen's is his recent stint as a judge on season 5 of Wes Bergman's reality TV show about entrepreneurs called The Blocks, which should be airing in the upcoming months. Well, welcome, Stephen, to the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast. I'm very excited to have you here.
Well, it's such a pleasure. And that intro was just, wow, over the top. I don't even know how to respond. I've never heard of myself being introduced that way before, but it's a pleasure to be here. And I'm just really excited to contribute and participate in any way that I can.
Well, thank you. And you deserve that. You've had a lot of really major accomplishments in your life. And actually, the first thing I was going to ask you is kind of related to that. I remember from us being able to, and just so my listeners know, we got to meet each other during the filming of Wes Bergman's The Blocks television show. And I got a chance to listen to a little bit about your life journey. And it's a really incredible story. And I was hoping you might be willing to give my listeners a little small recap of what you have experienced in life and how that has maybe contributed to where you are now in life.
Sure. Let's go backwards. So currently, I am the CEO and co-founder of Curacubby. And as you stated, we're focused on providing fintech technologies to education, recreation, and family service industries. And how I got to this place was through a very unlikely journey. So I'll go all the way back to childhood. So I came to the United States as a refugee immigrant of Chinese descent, but born in Vietnam. And shortly there, after the war, the Vietnamese communist government decided that it was a great idea to kick out all ethnic Chinese people. And we were part of that group. So we left Vietnam and lived in several refugee camps in both China as well as Hong Kong. And call it serendipity, call it a fate, call it an act of the universe, we somehow ended up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So my first experience of snow and anything cold was actually in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We didn't last there very long. So this is like preschool years. And our family took a train and boarded the train and left for San Francisco, California. And I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, Oakland, California, to be precise. And my early experiences in California was quite different than that from Michigan. In Michigan, we were the only, as I can remember, the only Asian family there. So it was mostly Caucasian white families, but we felt out of place. So when we entered California, we saw a lot of Asian people, a lot of Chinese people, a lot of Cantonese people, which is really our distinct ethnicity. And my first conclusion was that, great, now I'm going to be able to assimilate and be more included and have more of an inclusive like mentality with the community. But it was actually quite the opposite that I've experienced. So I didn't know that there were several class factors for Chinese people in the United States. So there's a group called ABCs, American-born Chinese people, and a group called FOBs, fresh off the boat.
And I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, there's actually I think there's a sitcom called Fresh Off the Boat, I believe.
That, you know, I think I've heard of that, but I guess I never realized that was like an actual established type of community type of thing.
Yeah, it's unfortunately it is. So when I came to the Bay Area, I was trying to make friends with, you know, all of my Chinese cohorts, but apparently I just didn't meet the class standards. I was like fresh off the boat. I didn't really speak English that well. Mm-hmm. So I pretended like, oh, I was born in Oakland. I was born in Michigan. I mean, I had to make up this identity. Ultimately, it didn't work because without authenticity, you just don't get very far. Yeah. So long story short, most of my friends growing up were African-American. So I grew up in the Black community. And by the age of 13, I was really entrenched into the hip hop scene. So I was like a teenage DJ. I started DJing high school dances in middle school and really became quite good at like scratching and mixing. And so this is, you know, I'm dating myself. This is the golden age of hip hop, early 90s. Mm-hmm. I built a record label in high school and was able to print vinyl records. Do you guys remember what those things are?
Yeah. Some people listening might, some other people probably have no idea. It's, you know, but it's come back, right? It's a trend. It's a throwback trend now to have vinyl records.
I see. In Barnes and Nobles and in other places, you know, so it's definitely made a strong comeback. And I think mm-hmm. It's a novelty now, I think.
It is.
Yeah. So vinyl records and CDs, and some people still own CDs. So we printed those and we distributed those, really like brought them to school dances, brought them to consignment stores, we'll sell them any way that we can. But over the course of our experience, we found out how important marketing and sales distribution was mm-hmm. to the entire structure of a business idea. So it wasn't just good enough to come up with great music. You had to get it out to people. Otherwise, nobody would listen to it. So that was really my early learnings about being an entrepreneur, is just that it's not just the idea, but it's the execution in getting your product out to the masses. So long story short, I was able to sell the record label. And with that money, I put myself through school. So I ended up going to community college and transferring to UC Berkeley, my alma mater. I love that school. And upon graduating UC Berkeley, I had a great experience, had an opportunity to join an early stage startup. I was employee number two. It was an online recruiting platform for technology companies. And, you know, some of our customers were Google, at the point where they were just an idea out of a garage. I recruited for Macromedia, who got acquired by Adobe. So that was my first experience in the technology world, understanding Internet 1.0. This is way before Facebook, by the way. So mm-hmm. I'm really dating myself. did really well there. And then after several years, I left that business to start my own platform, rocketstaffing.com. We had really great coverage, had a great business. And then, of course, the universe does certain things to you to really challenge your stamina and challenge your resilience. And you know what the universe did is that it completely annihilated Internet 1.0. So of all the great companies that were there, only a few are left. Google, Amazon, Yahoo, still around. You know, when I was recruiting, AOL was like the top company. And yeah. How many people even know what AOL stands for?
I know, right? I'm sure young people listening have no idea, but I mean, that was my main form of communication in college, right? Was Instant Messenger.
Exactly. So when Internet 1.0 went away, I had to make a decision. Do I want to go corporate? I had opportunities to go corporate, but I did a little bit of a stint over at Macromedia, and there's something about me. I've never been officially diagnosed, but I know I have ADHD. You know, even sitting here, like my legs are kind of like jittering and my hands are moving. Mm-hmm. I know I have it. So I decided to start something else. And I ventured into the fitness business because, I forgot to tell you this. When I was in the seventh grade, when I was 12 years old, I was paralyzed with Guillain-Barré syndrome. So,
wow, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Not very many people know about this. But I was a pretty much a depressed teenager. So I would, instead of going to PE, I joined ROTC, because in ROTC, you can wear a nice military uniform that would hide your body. In PE, you had to wear the blue shorts and the white t-shirts. And I probably weighed like 90 pounds in high school or something like that. No joke, right? So long story short there, I met a very, very inspiring mentor. This is in Oakland, California in the early 90s. She was very brave. She was my high school gym teacher. She was a bodybuilder slash track athlete slash like a semi-pro tennis player, but more importantly, she was out of a closet lesbian white woman who taught in a mostly Black Latino high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she really taught me everything about physical fitness, body parts, muscle groups, metabolism. And, you know, I built my confidence from her tutelage. So when the dot-com industry crashed, I really asked myself, like, oh, I'm in a pretty depressive state. I may not be the only person that's depressed. So what do people really need when they're depressed? They need therapy and they need exercise. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a therapist, but I know something about exercise. So I started a fitness business. It was a very successful fitness business, very strong brand, community brand here. We lasted about 17 years. I was able to transition out of that business about a year right before COVID. And it was during that time running that fitness business when my son, Mateo, was diagnosed with autism. And during that time, we had to, his mother and I, we had to make a decision if we wanted to stay primarily focused in entrepreneurship or devote some time to our son who was recently diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And was the latter. And in searching for appropriate programs for him, we just concluded that Mateo needed something special. So along with four other families, we founded a small preschool in a room of a church. And, you know, we tried our best to keep that program sustainable. And what we found out was that it was really difficult to do without technology. So we invested time and energy into developing proprietary technology for the school. And one thing led to another. CuraCubby came about.
Wow.
So that's the full circle. I am.
Wow. Now,
yeah.
I feel like there's a lot to unpack there. And I want to start with the first being, I'm going to go back into your story and then we'll kind of go forward into present day. But the fact that you had the journey that you did when you were so young, you know, being an immigrant, what was it about you that made you have that confidence to go out and be a DJ, to start a record label? I mean, where did that inspiration come from? Because I feel like it would be so easy, especially given what you were saying about some of the challenges of feeling like there was that community to fit into. I could see young people really struggling to feel confident in putting themselves out there. What was it that made you feel confident in putting yourself out there?
That's a really great question. And I'm not so sure that confidence was a main variable. I'm sure that confidence was maybe sprinkled throughout various aspects of my past. But I think it was more of like survivalist mentality. You know, I have to give a lot of credit to my mother. She's always been a survivalist. And I think, you know, very early on, we just didn't really have an out. I mean, I can share with you a story, a very personal story. I remember being in the grocery store with my mother. She didn't speak any English. I didn't speak any English. And we were on welfare. So we were using food stamps to pay for the food. I distinctly remember there might have been an issue of not having enough food stamps or something like that. So we couldn't check out properly. And my mother was like, "You tell this person, you know, that we're going to," I forgot what the exact dialogue was, but I was thinking in my mind, shoot, I don't speak English. I don't even know what to say. But the pressure, you know, I'm not saying this is a good thing by any stretch of imagination. It was a very, very harsh experience. Yeah. But that's an anecdote. That's like one out of thousands of experiences that I've lived through where you just don't really have a choice. It's like option one, you try to do something about it. Option two, you don't. So I've always kind of went with option one. And so it's through that practice, the discipline, your muscles adapt when you're doing physical exercise. But I think also your emotion and your spirits adapt when you have to go through like really harsh experiences, all contextual. Not to say that I had the harshest experience, all contextual, but it was, not the most fun thing to do as a child to have your mother tell you that you need to like negotiate this food stamp transaction. And it was already kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine how difficult that was. But what I'm hearing you say is those are the type of experiences that led you to feel like, if I can do this, I can put myself out there in other outlets.
I think that's right. I think they're like, it's like a ladder and there are many steps, right? If I can climb the first rung, well, I just climbed the first rung. What's the second rung? What's the third rung? And before you know it, you're like halfway up the ladder. And as long as you don't look down and get scared, you're actually okay, because all you have to do is get to the next rung. And that's how my life has always been like. You know, this is my fifth business. And every single time I started a new one, I can never predict what industry that I'm going to be in. I just never know.
I think the ADHD that you mentioned might definitely be there a little bit then. But probably a lot of it. But like, and I know behind the scenes, there's always so many challenges that go on. But, you know, if you look at your track record business-wise at a surface level, right? It's like everything you went after has been really great, has been really amazing. So what would you contribute your success to? And then I'm sure there has been challenges along the way, even throughout the success.
Yeah. The main contributor is community. You know, for some reason, I've always been lucky enough to be around people that supported whatever venture that I was in at the time. So going back to the DJ business, I was really fortunate to have a bunch of Black African-American friends that believed in DJ Stevie K, who is this Chinese guy fresh off the boat. Really, they could have said, you know, screw you, you know, you're not of our racial identity. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
So I was really fortunate, right? And then going into the .com community, it could have been said the same thing. Like, you're just this kid who graduated from liberal arts school. What do you know about tech recruiting? But that wasn't the case. You know, my former managers and the former CEO gave me a chance. Like, we kind of like you. We think you're kind of scrappy. You're able to sell a hip hop record label. So maybe you can, you know, headhunt and do sales, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the fitness business, the same thing. My community gave me a chance. It wasn't like I came with like 25 years of bodybuilding experience. This is my first time starting a fitness business. But for what it's worth, my personal experience of me having Guillain-Barré and being paralyzed showed people that there was a way and there was hope. Mm-hmm. So I think the community has always been a big factor to my success. And no matter where I go, I'll take the blocks as an example. And I met all of you guys there. Now you're my community. And I know in my heart that I could depend on you guys. If I ever needed help, I can pick up the phone, call Dr. Kristen, and you would leverage and give me help.
100%.
I've always had that faith. So there's always been that faith side of me. I'm a strong believer in the two things converging: your heart's desire, and then external forces working for that heart's desire. It's invisible, it's metaphysical, but I've always believed that ever since I was a little kid.
I love that. And you know what? I have to say, I think it's a little bit of a mindset too. And I can't help but feel like that maybe some of that mindset has also been a big contributing factor into some of the success that you've had, because I feel like that is a big part that sometimes people don't realize how big of a mindset can play in success, especially with being an entrepreneur and having multiple businesses and having different areas of interest. I mean, you have to have a solid mindset for people to have wanted to take a chance on you.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you have to believe that the answer is yes. That it may not be yes the first time, and it may not be yes the 99th time, but you got to know that sometime during the iteration, it'll be a yes. And I don't know where that came from. You know, I think, again, you know, if I think, I have to think about my parents, my mom is probably more like that. She's always been a survivalist. So I do agree with that. It is it's that faith. It'll all turn out the way it's supposed to.
I like that. And I think if anything, it shows the power of that mindset too, because you have had a lot of successful business ventures and you're even an inventor. I think you left that part out of your story as well.
Yes. It was during my fitness heydays that I also left out the fact that I was the head coach to the U.S. women's kettlebell team. We competed in Russia, Ukraine, Latvia, and we won championships there. We were the women's team was iconic. They were the first ever to do so in the history of kettlebell sport. So during that stint, we realized that, hey, people get hurt using these kettlebells if they're not careful. So we invented the first patented wrist protection wrist guard designed for kettlebells. And it's still one of the best-selling products in e-commerce right now. Yeah.
That's great. It's so crazy. And I say the word crazy, just I get excited about hearing about all the things that you've done. And I mean, especially coming from, you know, the youth experience that you had, the community experience that you had coming over to this country, you know, just jumping into things. And I just think it's so amazing that you are willing to take chances and you're willing to put yourself out there. And I mean, do you ever have fears of like, how could this go? Could this go a bad way? I mean, or is that not even something that you're thinking about when you get into a new venture?
It's pretty funny you bring this up. I was looking at my NATO chart just the other day, and one of the flashing warnings in my NATO chart was like, be careful because you tend to be overly optimistic about everything in life. You might want to back up and do some risk assessment on your stuff. So, no, thank you for raising that. I have to be careful. I am an overly optimistic person, and I have found myself, you know, not in the best situations, before. But, you know, I'm also critical about learning from my experiences. I take a lot of notes. I have, you know, notebooks galore, even as I'm speaking to you, like all kinds of notebooks, and I'm constantly jotting down my thoughts. So,
I like that you hear a lot of people say that that's actually a really great practice. So are the thoughts that you are jotting down, are they business thoughts? Are they just thoughts about what's going on in your life or reflection?
They're everything. They're thoughts about relationships, thoughts about business, thoughts about the universe, thoughts about nature, thoughts about animals, thoughts about insects. There goes my ADHD. But I jot all of it down. I jot mm-hmm. all of it down. I mean, for some odd reason, I'm able to string all of these divergent things together and make sense of it.
That makes perfect sense to me. I mean, I think everything you were saying to me is going, yep, ADHD. Yes, ADHD, which I love. And you and I have talked about this before. I mean, I see neurodiversity as a very positive thing. You know, it's having a unique brain that sees the world a little bit differently. And if anything, I think you are a great showcase of how having a unique brain who sees the world differently can still accomplish so many different things and be successful at them, that it didn't kind of pigeonhole you into having this one direct path or this one direct niche. You have a lot of different experiences and niches that you bring to the table.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like this always. I remember being in elementary school, deathly afraid to speak because I have dyslexia as well. I didn't really learn to read English well until I was in the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. I didn't really speak English well until, I don't know, probably in middle school. And my English is still not great, but I speak it with confidence.
I mean, you would never know that it wasn't your first language.
It's not my first language, yeah. And I can still speak Cantonese. I regret not learning to read and write it, but I can still speak conversational Cantonese. And that part actually surprises me because I don't get much practice at all. I speak to my parents in mostly in English and some mm-hmm. Cantonese, but I don't get Cantonese practice at all. So that it just surprises me that I can do it.
Your brain just held on to it.
It's weird. It's just very, very strange, right? Because they usually say, you know, with the oral language, the verbal language, if you don't practice it, you lose it. Mm-hmm. But I haven't practiced Cantonese in decades, and I'm confident I can speak it well.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you're right. I had a niece who was adopted from Russia when she was 10, and so when she came over, she didn't speak any English, and now she doesn't remember any Russian. So you're right. I mean, usually if you're not using it, you're losing it. Yeah. And so I think if anything, that just shows one more kind of like brain ability that you have, that you were able to hold on to the language.
One more of the spectral spectral traits that I have. Yes.
Which again are all positive traits. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, I think it's a benefit to hold on to any language skills or conversations that you're able to have. And I think this is actually a good time to kind of to transfer into this topic as well too. So you mentioned earlier, and I know we have spoken before about how you do have a child who is on the autism spectrum.
Yes.
And I'm interested to know, how do you think that has shaped you both as an entrepreneur and as a parent?
Great question. So the first question first, we would not have Cured Cubby today if it wasn't for Mateo.
I guess, you know, thinking about it in the story about how you started the school.
Exactly. Yeah. So Mateo is really responsible for the conception of this fintech, edtech business. How it has shaped me as a parent? Wow. I'll be honest with you. In hindsight, just thinking about like where I am today, like I would only consider myself to be like a real parent to Mateo just very recently. I would say like Mateo's 15 now. I would say the last 13 years or so, I've just been kind of like, man, just learning how to be with him. Mm-hmm. Today, like as of today, like literally today, November 9th, I had a proud moment this morning. Him and I went to school and we were having a conversation in the car and I feel like I'm feeling like a dad. But this is a recent thing. This is a recent thing. You know, Mateo is a very, very unique individual. He was born in April. He's an Aries. He's all this fiery energy. But he doesn't, he's not a very expressive individual verbally. Mm-hmm. He expresses himself physically, you know, through macro kind of motions with his body. His expressive language isn't always there. So it's hard to really take in all of his needs and his desires. So, you know, for a good part of the last 15 years, I was just trying to understand how to wing it really kind of day by day, week by week. But something changed kind of post COVID. A lot has changed post COVID, and it really gave me an opportunity to acknowledge him as my teacher. I know that sounds a little crazy, but you know, it's a cliche, right? They say like, you know, your children are your teachers. I didn't really understand that cliche until like recently. I did an inventory of my last 15 years with him. Like, okay, I get it. The last 13 years was just him teaching me. And the last 2 years is me trying to reciprocate back to him what I've learned.
Mm-hmm. You know, but I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'll say, I have two children as well. It isn't horrible that I have to stop and think how old they are, but 11-year-old and a 9.5-year-old, or almost 11-year-old, 9.5-year-old. And, you know, I don't think that there is any playbook that comes with children, regardless of what their needs are, right? And so I think what you said makes a lot of sense, but I want you to know, from parent to parent, I have no idea. Like, I don't what I'm doing. You know, even sometimes I reflect and I'm like, I'm somebody's mom. Like, how did I get to be somebody's mom? And you know, it's those moments when I'm spending time with them, I'm like, yeah, this is my child that I produced. And it's still a crazy thought to me. So I want you to know that I think some of those feelings are just normal parent feelings too, regardless of what your child may or may not need or who they are, that we all are just winging it on a day-to-day basis.
Well, that's a really assuring statement coming from Dr. Kristen. Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's horrible. All my clients go out the window right there. Well, right, I'm not like, going to listen to this woman anymore. Yes. But I think it's true. You know, I think, yes, I can tell you how the brain processes and I can tell you why they're thinking or they're doing the things that you are. But even as a parent too, like, you know, I help people with those things. And even I sometimes are like, I have no idea. Like, I still can't get my child to eat something specific, or she's a picky eater, or she's not doing certain things, or she's dealing with certain anxieties or whatever it might be. You know, I still, as a parent, even though I help people with those things, I still struggle with those too. And I think that's because there is no owner manual that comes with them when you're leaving the hospital.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. There's like, you know, coming from coming from like a Cantonese origin, living in the US, it's super tricky because not only is there not a playbook on one end of the spectrum, but on the other end of the spectrum, there are unlimited playbooks coming from sources that you don't even want. My mom has a playbook that her mother, her family, and like Chinese people love to give advice. they love to give advice. So it's almost everything from like, don't feed him this, feed him this. Mm-hmm. You know, he shouldn't be wearing this. He should be wearing this. So, you know, I'm like, so in my mind, the pendulum is swinging, you know, and I'm trying to find out where I can kind of be centered. And I'm making progress, actually. I'm happy to state that I'm making progress. A friend had asked me over text the other day, you know, how are you doing? And I was actually surprised to respond like, Mateo's progressing. That was like one of my first two sentences. And I was like, wait a second, did I just write that? So I'm making some progress.
I have no doubt in my mind that you have a beautiful relationship with Mateo and you are doing wonderful and amazing things as a father. There's no doubt in my mind. And trust me, this is what I do for a living. And I talk to a lot of people all day about this. So I know right off the bat, just based off the little that you've talked about him, that you are doing an amazing job as a parent.
Oh, thank you for those kind words.
No, it is the truth. So I want to know a little bit more too about the education program that you co-founded specifically for Mateo. Like, what did that look like? What kind of learning? Like, how did you go about that? I mean, I'm assuming education is not in your background field. So tell me about this. Where did this come from? Where was the inspiration? Obviously Mateo, but I mean, for developing the school.
Sure. Again, going back to this notion of community, it was serendipity. I don't even remember how we found this, but we found a summer camp that was happening in a neighboring city. And the summer camp was program managed by an ex-speech path retiring from a local school district. And her best friend was also the retiring director of special education.
Okay.
So they kind of put this summer camp together. And this was our first time kind of getting Mateo into something. We're like so nervous. Like he's not going to fit. He's, you know, Mateo doesn't fit in. Is, you know how parents are. You know how we think the worst. Like,
yeah,
this kid's not going to fit in anywhere, right? So at that point, my ex-wife and I, we said, okay, let's give it a shot. And on day one, Mateo had the most brilliant time ever. The staffers there just knew how to meet him at his level. They knew how to play with him and through play bring about the education. And then on day two, the same thing happened. Day three, the same thing happened. Over the course of 3 weeks, it was replicated perfectly every single time. And I think it was only four or five families. And as we were exiting, we were doing like an exit survey for the camp. And all of us parents sat there like this, like, do we really want to leave? Like, we don't want to leave. Like, if we leave, where do we go? How do you get better than this? So the four families got together and were like, wait a second. You know, Robin's retired. Dana's retired. Like, you know, let's talk to him about doing something. I don't know how we did it. We convinced him. I don't know how we did it. You know, in hindsight, that was probably one of the most crazy propositions ever. But they're both retiring. They're like, we're done. We've been at the school district for 30 years, whatever. We're done. But somehow we were able to convince them. And, you know, maybe it had a lot to do with the parents and the kids as well. I mean, I think they loved the kids. And then we parents, we were just nagging too hard. We just didn't give them an out.
But I think that's fantastic. And so was there any kind of magic structure? I mean, other than like, did they just do what was at the camp? What did that look like?
Yeah. So I think most of the credit has to go towards Robin, who's a speech path, and Dana, who is a program director. Mm-hmm. They both came out of the school district, but they both implemented frameworks that were very unique to their success, which is, are you familiar with Amelia Regia?
A little bit, yes.
Yes. So it's a system of learning from Italy. They took a social emotional approach. They took floor time approach. They just combined a lot of things that work for them, and they embedded speech really, really early into the programming as well. So it was a hybrid mechanism, but the framework really worked. And, you know, today the school is a California NPS. I don't know how many, there's like 80 families. There's a lot of families there, you know.
So it's still going strong today.
It's pre-K to 12 today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm no longer active, you know, as a parent co-founder, but I try to help when I can, but I don't think they need my help. They're so well-ran. It's one of the most well-ran, special needs program anywhere to be found. I really got to give them a lot of credit, but yeah, the credit goes to Robin and Dana. And also Robin was, I don't know if she still is, but at least at that time, she was an adjunct professor at one of the state universities teaching speech path through the lens of, okay, when you're working with children on the spectrum, this is the approach. So she had, you know, an assembly line of like well-vetted professionals, well-trained professionals coming in to the education industry. So that, I mean, you know, everything lined up. Because as you know, recruiting for good staff is probably one of the most difficult things to do in education.
Especially right now.
Especially right now. But Robin had an assembly line of, you know, high level educators wanting to go into this profession.
That's amazing.
Right? So it all kind of came together. Community, right? Community.
No, that is crazy. That is crazy. And I think it's fantastic that the school still exists. And I have to take a moment to get on my soapbox and say also too, that it really shows what can happen when you get school districts and some of these people out of the way and you let professionals do what they know how to do, but that's when the magic happens and these amazing programs get created.
Yep.
And I feel like anything that's a testament to that. So I know that's my soapbox for a second, but I love that program exists.
And you work with school districts. You know how difficult these IEPs are, right? Like there's all, so for what it's worth, you know, the school right now, they have really good relationship with the school districts because the school districts know that it's not going to be a contentious process. Like if we have individuals that need the support, Wellspring is a place that we can trust to make sure that the IEP goals are fulfilled and that the families are happy. And that most importantly, the child is happy. And you know how difficult those relationships are to build, right? You know it firsthand.
Yes, I do. I do. And how most of the time too, it all comes down to communication. And usually if I'm getting involved in an advocacy role in any way, it's usually because it was a breakdown in communications. But it sounds like your staff there are the teachers who are there, the program that really understand that. And that's kind of the cornerstone foundation of making sure that, you know, the kid's best interest is at heart and that communication is happening. I love it. I love that program exists. So thank you to you for creating something or being a co-founder on something like that.
Oh my gosh. I just feel blessed to have had that experience, you know, again, in hindsight, like if I were to like, just take a memory shot and like display that memory shot onto the big screen. If this was a movie, it was a scary movie. Very, very scary movie.
I'm from a parent perspective, 100%. Because I also support that aspect too. So I can understand from the parental aspect, I'm sure that was incredibly scary, but it just, the beauty that came out of that experience and how it has gone on to help so many more families. I mean, as an educator, I know how rewarding that would feel. And I'm sure as a parent, knowing that you're helping these other parents, that has to feel amazing as well too.
Well, thank you. Thank you for raising that. I haven't given that aspect of it much thought, but I hope that this continues. I know when I dropped them off at school today, I saw a lot of happy kids.
That's amazing. Yeah. That is amazing. Well, let me ask you, how did Cura Cubby then come out of this? Because it sounded like that happened about the same time that Mateo and you having, and you going through this experience then kind of inspired Cura Cubby. Tell me more about Cura Cubby.
Yes. So during the early days of Wellspring, we were having a lot of issues in the back office. You know, mm-hmm. as you know, back office work is very complicated. How do you reconcile data that you get from a paper packet, get that onto a spreadsheet, make sure that stuff is accurate, collect tuition, all yeah. that stuff was manual. So we were looking for software to reconcile this process, and there wasn't a whole lot out there. There just wasn't. Mm-hmm. So I think I remember giving my brother a call, and he's a good guy. He's been at Google for like 2 decades, and he was there. He's like, "Oh, this is so simple. All you have to do is integrate the PayPal API with an online form API." I'm like, dude, stop. I don't work at Google, man. Slow your roll. And he's like, "Well, then it sounds like you need to find technical people that can help you put this stuff together, right?" So again, going back to the aspect of community, I was like, "Well, where do I find these technical people?" And they're like, "Oh my God, they're right under my nose. Like most of my clients at my fitness business are in the tech industry." So one of my very good clients, Brian, was a director of product at a fintech company. Mm-hmm. But he also, you know, graduated Stanford with the computer science background. He's like, "Oh yeah, we can build a little beta pilot." And we built it, and we got feedback from the school, and it started to work. And, you know, I think it was like 8 months later, he was like, "Hey, now that we built this thing for the school, there might be a desire to have this in at a broader market level. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you think about making some cold calls?" And I was like, "Sure." So I ended up cold calling a bunch of schools in the local area, and they were like, "Yeah, we need this. Like, we don't have anything like this. It's needed." So I remember selling to the first 10 schools and selling to the first 50 schools and 100 schools. And before you know it, we had like over 100 schools in the Bay Area using this product. And then one thing led to another. VCs were interested in funding this project. And
wow.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. I love your story because it's one of those stories where like you just amazing opportunities just kind of present themselves, and you know exactly how to kind of capitalize on it and have that confidence and take a chance. And I think that's fabulous because I feel like so many people are often scared to take those chances, and you kind of embrace it a little bit.
Yeah. You know, the worst thing that can happen, the absolute worst thing that can happen in any situation in life is that you learn something, and that ain't so bad, is it?
I like that. I think that's I think that's a really good way of putting it. I like that a lot.
Right.
Well, we're getting yeah. close to the end. So I want to ask you a couple more things. The first one being, if anybody wanted to reach out to you, follow you on social media, get to know you or Cure Cubby better, how would they go about doing that?
Yes. Both Cure Cubby and Stephen Kwong are on LinkedIn. So that's probably going to be the best place to reach out if it's business related. I'm pretty active on Instagram, but that's more like my private stuff. If you kind of want to follow the life of Steven, feel free to do that. Cure Cubby's on Instagram as well. I'm on Twitter every once in a while just for some thought leadership stuff. But and you can always contact me directly through Dr. Kristen if you want to reach out to her and get a hold of me personally. I'm sure she'll put us in touch.
Absolutely. And I think you need to have a handle for DJ Stevie K. I'm just going to put that out there. I loved that when you dropped that name. I'm going to say that I think you need to switch up an account or something, and we need Stevie K for sure.
I think I did a Google search for DJ Stevie. I think there were like several personalities out there by now, but I'll embrace all of them. Yeah.
Just check it out, you know, check it yes. out. And then my last question that I want to ask you, and I ask all my guests this, if you could give any advice to youth or young adults who are struggling academically or social emotionally or both, what advice would you give?
The advice that I would give is to expand your scope of faith. You can trust people. I know the world is a scary place. I know the world oftentimes feel like they're working against you, or can feel that way, but expand your scope of faith. Know that if you talk to person A, he wasn't helpful, continue to talk to person B. If she wasn't helpful, talk to person C. You will be surprised at the community that you will attract based on your own energy. I do believe in the concept of soul grouping, not every soul belongs to every single group, but there is a group that belongs with you. So you expand your scope of faith, you will find this group, and this will be your community. And that's how I've always felt like I've been fortunate, is because I've had the engagement of my community to help me. So I encourage you to do that.
I love that. I love it. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I truly appreciate your time and energy today.
It's a pleasure. This was such an amazing experience for me. Thank you. And I wish you plenty of luck in your endeavors as well.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And thank you to all my listeners for tuning in to the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast. And I will check you out next week.